बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरवन चारी यमुना तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Text 6.
Maitreya Uvacha. Prajasreshi Bhagavan Kardamo Brahmano Ditaha Sarasvatyam Tapastepe Shahasra Nam Samadasha Prajasri Jeti Bhagavan Kardamo Brahmano Ditaha Sarasvatyam tapastepe Sahasranam samadasha Prajasrijeti bhagavan Kardamo brahmanoditaha Sarasvatyam tapastepe Sahasranam samadasha Tepe. Satisfatam tapase. Kardamo brahmanoditaha. Satisfatam tapaste pe. Maitreya uvacha prajasti jete bhagava. Nudita sarisvyatam tapastepe sahasranam samadasha. Maitreya uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Praja, children, Srija, beget, iti, thus, Bhagavan, the worshipful, Kardamaha, Kardama Muni, Brahmana, by Lord Brahma, Uditaha, commanded, Sarasvatyam, on the bank of the river Sarasvati, Tapaha, penance, Tepe, practiced, Sahasranam, of thousands, Samaha, years, Dasha, 10. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The great sage Maitreya replied, commanded by Lord Brahma to beget children in the worlds, the worshipful Kardamuni practiced penance on the bank of the river Sarasvati for a period of 10,000 years. Purport. It is understood herein that Kardam Muni meditated in yoga for 10,000 years before attaining perfection. Similarly, we have information that Valmiki Muni also practiced yoga meditation for 60,000 years before attaining perfection. Therefore, yoga practice can be successfully performed by persons who have a very long duration of life, such as 100,000 years. In that way, it is possible to have perfection in yoga. Otherwise, there is no possibility of attaining the real perfection. Following the regulations, controlling the senses, and practicing the different sitting postures are merely the preliminary practices. We do not know how people can be captivated by the bogus yoga system in which it is stated that simply by meditating 15 minutes daily, one can attain the perfection of becoming one with God. This age, Kali Yuga, is the age of bluffing and quarrel. Actually, there is no possibility of attaining yoga perfection by such paltry proposals. The Vedic literature, for emphasis, clearly states three times that in this age of Kali, Kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. There is no other alternative, no other alternative, no other alternative than Hare Nam, chanting the holy name of the Lord. Om Akyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha
Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, ask for your blessings. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Srila Prabhupada, Guru Parampara. May Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased. May all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Hare Krishna.
So again, this is the third canto, chapter 21, entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Text 6. The great sage Maitreya replied, commanded by Lord Brahma to beget children in the worlds, the worshipful Kardama Muni practiced penance on the bank of the river Sarasvati for a period of 10,000 years. So after countless lives, then we're sitting now at the lotus feet of Radha Shyam Sundar, and we're hearing the supreme book, the supreme scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam. Finally receiving our real education is a nice definition of knowledge. What is knowledge? What is education? In the 11th canto, 11, 12, 24, Krishna tells Uddhava, what is the purpose of knowledge? The Bhagavatam here has so much knowledge. What is the purpose of knowledge? If you go to any institution of education or knowledge and ask them, what is the purpose of knowledge? What do you think people will say? Yeah, you learn skills, you acquire some knowledge so that you can work and be successful, be happy in that way, right? So listen to Krishna's definition of what knowledge and education is. He says, he gives like three steps. He says, first of all, knowledge is meant to sharpen our inner discrimination between matter and spirit. When you hear truth about the Atma, about the living entity. Our mind, our intelligence, our ego, these are all actually of the material energy. And then there's the Atma. So to begin to sharpen that, that's the first step of knowledge. Like sharpening an axe. And then with that axe, the next step is to cut the connection between the subtle body and the Atma. vidya kutarena, like an axe, you cut that relationship, that connection, the subtle body and the Atma. And then, after that, you put down the axe. Now knowledge is complete. Put down the axe. You don't really need knowledge anymore once you're situated in the Atma. But then what is the Atma vritti? What is the function of the Atma? Then you engage yourself fully in service to Guru and Krishna. This is the purpose of knowledge. It first sharpens. It sharpens the intelligence to see the difference between matter and spirit. And then you do something with that axe that's been sharpened. You break the connection between the subtle body and the Atma. Now you're situated in the Atma, and now you don't need knowledge. Now you just engage yourself fully in service, because that is the vritti, that is the function of the Atma, is to serve. So Guru Upasana, that one worships then the spiritual master in truth, which means they're serving the spiritual master. That is the real worship of the spiritual master. So this is Krishna, this is Bhagavatam. That's why I said this is our real education has finally begun after so many lives. Because you go to school and we get educated and we're learning things. And as you said, basically you're just taking fragments of information and trying to maybe learn something with it so that later you can work. And what do you work? You can set yourself up to be comfortable in this world, get some income, provide for family maybe, and enjoy as much as you can before we pass away. And here Krishna's definition of knowledge. To break free from the conditioned self, to overcome the conditioned self, be situated in the Atma, and give oneself completely to the service of the Lord. Sattvaguna can give us some, if we're in Sattvaguna, so while you're getting knowledge also, there has to be some purification, some things that you're doing to actually be able to receive it. So as one comes to Sattvaguna, their mind becomes more stable and clear, so then they can discriminate better between matter and spirit. It becomes more and more refined, the consciousness, and then you start to really see the distinction between the self and the not-self. So Sattvaguna can give us that, but it can't give us knowledge of God. It can't give us knowledge of God. So then after you break free from the subtle body, situated in the Atma, and you begin service, then that service is what? Bhakti is what gives knowledge of God. The Bhakti Shakti, so the Samvit Shakti, reveals Krishna and reveals who we really are, and naturally we engage in service because we are servants of God. So here, in this section today, Vidura is describing, he's desiring to hear about the Vamsha of Svayambhuva Manu. It says here, he's desiring to hear Svayambhuvasya. He wanted to hear Svayambhuvasya Manu. Vamsha. He wants to hear about the Vamsha of Svayambhuva Manu. Why? He's asking, tell me more, Maitreya Muni, about the dynasty of Svayambhuva Manu. Why does he want to know? Because Vamsha Parama Samattaha. This Vamsha, this line, this dynasty is so highly esteemed and glorious. And the personalities in this line are so exemplary. Prabhupada says, by hearing about the family, the line of Svayambhuva Manu, one becomes enlightened. We know he had 5 children. And one of his children, his daughter Devahuti. And then who came from Devahuti? Kapiladev. He also had a son, Uttanapad. Who came from Uttanapad? Dhruva Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj is also in this line, another incarnation of the Lord. He had another son, Svayambhuva Manu, Priyavrata, who was also a great devotee. And then further, in the same line, Rishabdev appears, another incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So this is the line. This is why by hearing about Svayambhuva Manu, This is why Vidura wants to hear more, because you'll hear about all these personalities gradually in the Bhagavatam. Third canto, Kapiladeva. Fourth canto, Prithu Maharaj also. Dhruva. And then fifth canto, Rishabhdev, Priyavrata. Bharat, also Rishabhdev's son. So he's asking to hear about this line, because by hearing about this line, one becomes enlightened. We all like to get together and talk about our families, right? It's very common. We come together, we talk about our children or our parents, our siblings, grandparents. This is what we do. We come together and we talk about. But we can hardly say that we're getting enlightened. We're usually just hearing about drama. Drama in the family. And this is also going into us. So it's the opposite of being enlightened often. We're just getting absorbed. But this, imagine this family, Svayambhuva Manu, by hearing about them, one becomes purified and enlightened. You know, there's that story of Prabhupada when he was in India, and he was invited often to the homes of some Indian gentlemen, some family, to speak something on a prasadam. So he was invited to one place, and this very nice Indian man said, "Swami Prabhupada, so this is my wife." And she came forward and she kind of bowed her head in respect, out of respect. "This is my wife's brother, and this is his wife. And then these are their children." And all these people were coming forward to greet Srila Prabhupada. "And these are my three children. This is my daughter. And then this is my son-in-law. And these are their four children." And they would all come forward. So for a long time, all these people, Prabhupada was getting introduced to this whole family. And when they stepped out of the room, Prabhupada turned to some of his disciples there and said, "In other words, he is saying, this is my sex life." This is the whole big family, children and children and grandchildren. In other words, this is what he's saying. So family, we talk about family and share about our family. And the hearing, Bhagavatam, gives the family of Svayambhuva Manu, which is so powerful. Three incarnations of the Lord appear. In this section, it's the prelude to Devahuti and the marriage arrangement between Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Devahuti, she was a princess, being the daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, but she was also a yogi. Prabhupada said she was also very practiced in yoga. And her husband, Kardama Muni, was Mahayogi. He had incredible powers, right? You remember we'll hear about how he creates an aerial mansion. Actually, a yogi can create anything material. Even that's why I said that even a planet can be created. That may seem incredible, but there's actually an explanation of how that's possible. You know, the first element to come into creation is the Mahatattva. And from the Mahatattva, everything else evolves from out of the Mahatattva. All matter, subtle and gross. So we have the Mahatattva also within our individual being. It's called the Chitta. So a yogi, they've become so purified by their practice that they can use the Chitta to also create anything out from it, because everything comes out from it. On that larger scale, it's the Mahatattva. But we also have it within us, and a small portion of it called the Chitta. So that Chitta, it can actually produce anything it wants. Anything. So yogis, by the purified consciousness, they can, therefore, by their concentration of their mind, they can think of something, an apple, and they can manifest it. They can think of anything. They can think of a planet and manifest it. Because after all, the planets, the physical planets, are coming from the Mahatattva to begin with. So if you have that within you and you know how to use it, then you can create things. So these are all, of course, even in the Yoga Sutras, these are distractions actually from the spiritual path. You have a goal. These things will come because of the powers, the potential of consciousness. This is the potential of the consciousness. It can do amazing, remarkable things and create anything. So Therefore, Kardamuni had these powers. And here it says, Brahmanodita. Yeah, pretty good. Brahmanodita. He was commanded by Lord Brahma to have children. So what did he do? He said, yes, I will do as you command, and now I'll prepare myself. Think about this. This is his family planning, you know? We talk about family planning. Okay, let's plan to have children. Let's get prepared. This is how he prepares. Says here, Sarasvatyam tapaste pe sahasranam samadasha. He goes to the river Sarasvati and performs austerities for 10,000 years to prepare himself before having children. And it's also, the next verse it's described, it tells us what were these austerities. Samprapede harim bhaktya. It was devotion, actually. The devotional austerities. It was for the pleasure of God. So it's bhakti. So for 10,000 years to prepare, 10,000 years, he was there along the river Sarasvati, and he engaged himself in this devotion to the Lord. And because it was devotion, it was bhakti, then what happened? As a result, the Lord himself appeared. In his beautiful, blissful, transcendental form, he comes to Kardamuni. Beautiful form of God. Some people think when we say God has a form, it's a limitation. But that doesn't make any sense, because we say he has an all-pervading form also. And he also has a form as a person. To say he doesn't or can't have a form as a person, that's the limitation, no? If you say, no, that's not really, he can't do that. He's just an all-pervading. We say he's both all-pervading and he has a personal form. So we're the ones who are not limiting God when we say that he has a form. He can do that. His powers are inconceivable. If he can be bigger than the biggest, he can be smaller than the smallest. And Prabhupada says he can also be medium size. Bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, and also the size of you, if he wants. This is the power of God. No limit. Unlimited. But to say, no, that's not possible, but he's pervading everything. That's God's form. It is actually formless. That's the limitation. So this beautiful form, you see Krishna, sweetness, beauty, blissful. This is the nature of God. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti. This is the supreme feature of God is Bhagavan. Actually, it's described Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, is Svarup Aikya. Those three are actually one entity. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. It's actually one entity. Svarup Aikya, Eka, means one form. But the reason why it's seen in different ways is because of the various coverings of the observer. The capacity of the observer. If they don't have love for God, but they've purified themselves to a very high degree, they will see the feature of God that's simply an all-pervading light, Brahma Jyoti. Jyoti means light, spiritual light. That is God also. Yeah. And one is further purified, they can see Paramatma, the form of God within all things, within the heart. And when one actually engages in service and has love, then the personal feature of God is revealed. So the example is given sometimes of Narada Muni. You know, Narada Muni is flying through the sky from far away, and some are observing him. And first, because he's so far away, the person doesn't have the capacity to see the details of his personality. They just see a light coming. So what's this light coming? But as Narada Muni comes closer, they see an outline of a form. They see some details, but it's not close enough to see all the details. So they see, wow, this seems to be like a body, a radiant body. That is compared to Paramatma realization. And then Narada Muni comes right before you. Ah, it is Narada Muni. I can see his features, his eyes, his nose. He's smiling. So it was all one being, right? The light, the emanation, the form, and then all the details of the face, the beauty. It's all one person, but because the observer could only, because of the limitations of the observer, he has to wait for Narada Muni to come closer and closer and closer. And what draws Krishna closer and closer and closer to us so that we can see his face is devotion. So just imagine, Kardama Muni, after his 10,000 years of devotional austerity for the pleasure of God, then God appears before him. And you can see the sweet personality of God. What happens when he gets darshan? It's said that the Lord, standing before, smiling before Kardamuni, he then sheds a tear out of gratitude because Kardamuni for so many years has been performing these austerities to see him, to have his blessing. And so out of gratitude, the Lord comes and he sheds a tear, and that tear falls to the ground. That becomes Bindu Sarovara, the place of the teardrop of the Lord. So even today you can go to that place. Bindu Sarovara. It's the place where a tear was shed by the Lord because of the devotion of Kardamuni. So this is the Lord. He has these sweet exchanges. Rasavai Saha. There's this verse from the Taittiriya Upanishad. Rasavai Saha Rasam Hye Vayam Labvanadi Bhavati. It's a description of God, raso vai saha. He is rasa. It's a hard word to translate into English, rasa. Tastes, Prabhupada says, are mellows, but it's really these different flavors of loving relationship. He is that. This is the best definition of God. Because he is a person, and when you exchange, it will be so sweet and wonderful. He does everything perfectly and excellently, and it fills a person. Bhakti ras, the different flavors of relationship that are completely pure and perfect and eternal. So that verse, rasa vai saha, he is rasa, is in the Upanishad. And it says, labd vanadi bhavati. And if you can attain him, you also become filled with rasa and ananda. Labda means to obtain something. Ananda, anadi, bhavati, one becomes filled with ananda. So he is rasa, and if you obtain him, you also will be filled with rasa and bliss. So when we're chanting the holy name, we can think this, I'm so covered, Krishna. I'm so covered by this material energy and identified, but I'm saying your name is full of bliss and joy, perfection. And you are Rasa Raj, you want to actually exchange in relationship, and I'm saying that name. Please allow me just one experience. If we can just experience it for a moment, immediately we'll also be filled with joy. The name Krishna. The name Krishna is the supreme name of God. You know, I've mentioned this before, but there's a word in English and in so many other languages that you say exactly the same. You say it in the same way, whether it's Spanish, Italian, German. And it's a word that's related to the word Krishna. And if you look it up in the you can look it up on your phones even, the Oxford Dictionary. The word is, anyone know the word? Is a word, and if you hear the definition of this word, you will know it's connected to Krishna. So the word is charisma. If you look up the word charisma, it says, this is the definition of it. Compelling attractiveness that inspires devotion in others. You know, we use that word, someone has charisma. It's used, you know, in a very mundane way, but actually it has divine origins. Even in the Bible, you can see this word is used sometimes for those who have spiritual power or spiritual influence. So charisma. There's so many languages where the way it doesn't change the way you say it. It's just charisma. So it's interesting. But compelling attractiveness that inspires others to be devoted to you. So this is Krishna. This is the name of Krishna. He naturally draws us in. If we can contact him, and if we serve him, we'll be spontaneously drawn to him, to his service. So it will all happen naturally. We just have to remove the layers, the conditioning. Sarvopadi vanir muktam. To become free from different upadis, designations, identifications. And then we'll feel just like a magnet is naturally drawn to an iron file. It's natural. But if the magnet is covered with some rust, then it may not contact. So the rust is removed, and again, contact. This is what we're doing when we're chanting, when we're serving, when we're hearing. So this section, of course, now this is Satya Yuga. So the process, the Yuga Dharma, and Satya Yuga was what? Meditation, yoga. And actually, everyone in Satya Yuga, they all knew, as soon as they were born, they knew that we are eternal spiritual beings, but we have just slightly fallen from that state of consciousness. So now the only purpose of us being here is to now regain our spiritual consciousness. And they would just go get underway doing that. That's it. Everyone in Satya Yuga knew that. You're born and you realize, I've slightly fallen from my highest self. So the whole purpose of this creation is an opportunity now to get back to that. And they could do it. They'd sit in meditation. They would live 100,000 years and sit in meditation. We're hearing here Kardamuni for 10,000 years, and he realized himself and God. Because they had ekagra. Ekagra means they had the ability to concentrate. Ekagra is like very focused, deep concentration. The power of ekagra. Eka means one, and agra means point. The power of being one-pointed in whatever you focus on. The Yoga Sutra describes this, that if you can reach this stage of ekagra, one-pointed attention, and this is relevant for devotees, because the acharya who makes all these parallels between the path of yoga, Patanjali's yoga, and bhakti yoga, is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says all of these stages in the practice of meditation, where first he says there are five stages of consciousness. The first is mudha. We know that word, right, from Prabhupada. It means you're very dull. You can't concentrate, actually. Your mind is very tired and lazy, and you don't want to concentrate. Life is just happening, and you're just responding. Very little ability to concentrate. The next stage is chitta. Chitta. It means maybe you're not dull, completely dull, but your mind is restless. Still, concentration is very, very difficult. Your mind is busy and restless. So you can see mudha is connected to the mode of ignorance, chitta to the mode of passion. The next stage is vikchipta, which means you're mostly unable to concentrate. But when you sit down and fix your mind on something, you really want to do something, then you can concentrate. Think about this with our chanting. And we can see where we are, because even vikchipta is advanced, because maybe my mind is usually restless, but now I'm going to be attentive for my rounds. I can do that. And I'm going to just focus on hearing the name of Krishna. That is vikchipta. And then the next stage is ekagra. Ekagra means now you can completely focus the mind. Now you can really always stay in a state of focus. So in Satya Yuga, they're practically born with ekagra. And therefore, meditation, they could do it. So just think, as time has passed, look how much we've been, so many distractions. We just created a world. As I said earlier, in Satya Yuga, people used to think, I'm born here, and now they have the realization, now I have to get back to Atma realization. But so much time has passed now where we don't see the world in that way, that it's this bridge that I'm supposed to reach my highest potential. We've made it very comfortable. We've made it home, even though it's a bridge. We made a bridge home. It's only meant for one purpose, to return. Religion, the word religion means to return, to reconnect to God, to the true self. That's the only purpose of this creation, is for that. But we've forgotten that and we've turned it into, no, this is the place. But we've got to set it up very comfortable, very nice, and just be here and do the best we can and enjoy while we're living. So that's, and because of that, the material energy has just been taken in so many forms of enjoying those conceptions and those ideas and the enjoyment, that we become attached to it all. And so we cannot concentrate on the goal, even if we want to. Even if you make a decision, still the mind is so filled with material samskaras that keep coming up. Filled with samskaras. So, these five stages of yoga, coming from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, of the focus of consciousness, also mark the path of bhakti, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And so, it's specifically connected to chanting. He calls, when you come to the stage, Rupa Goswami gives 9 stages, right? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, ekagra in the system of bhakti yoga is represented by the word nishta. So first, we have faith that's given. We come in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. And bhakti lata bij. What is the bhakti lata bij? It's a samskar that's given, a transcendental samskar that's given by the spiritual master that enters the heart of a receptive person. Oh. And what is it actually? It's a samskar, but what is it? What is it really made of? Krishna seva vasana, the desire to serve Krishna. It shows up in a very small way to begin with, because there's so much covering, so it's not very. It's powerful. It's completely powerful. But because of the covering, we just feel it as a little inclination that service to Krishna is really what I should be doing. And then that draws a person to Sangha, Sadhu Sangha. And in that Sadhu Sangha, one then has an opportunity to meet and take Diksha from a spiritual master. That is the fruit of Sadhu Sangha, that one takes initiation from a spiritual master. Now your Sadhu Sangha is very... You're setting yourself up very well for the next stage, which is bhajana kriya. Now you begin to practice. What is our practice? Hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, performing service, following the orders of the spiritual master. This is the bhajana kriya. And you're supposed to be very regulated. Why are we regulated with it? So that the mind becomes more steady, just like in yoga. You see, they're just doing it by a focused concentration. Get steady, keep focus. Meditation like that. But we're also making our lives regulated, you know? If you're getting up at this time, you see the Lord, say certain prayers, you do chanting. If we're fortunate, we've been given some service that we can do. We do it regularly. You know, whatever that service may be. It may be cleaning, it may be cooking. We're reading every day. In this way, the mind is becoming less restless and focused on just one path, one goal. And the steadiness is beginning. So that is like the stage of vikshipta, where mostly you're distracted, but then your devotional activities keep you nicely regulated. You're getting some stability in your mind. So we're doing that again and again. And then we're chanting. And it's again a practice of focusing on the sound of the name. As soon as one finally gets focus of the chanting of the holy name, one is so dedicated to it, then you reach the stage of nishta, steadiness, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls ekagrita chitta. Now your chitta has become like ekagra. Ekagrita chitta means steady consciousness. And now, at that stage, all the miraculous things begin to happen. Because now there's some stability and you are receptive. And some of the anarthas, they're not gone completely, but they've died down, some of the powerful ones that pull us. And you're no longer indulging in them. And now when you sit down to chant, the form of God is revealed to you in your heart. Imagine. Then you see Krishna. Truly see Him. And imagine the inspiration and the dedication to now give yourself more and more, to surrender more and more. And ask, because now you're actually having darshan of God, just like Kardamuni, after 10,000 years, he's seeing God, and his heart is so moved. His heart melts. So then the next stage is ruchi. Then the sweet qualities of the Lord begin to manifest. So like this, and then it goes further and further. But so this whole Patanjali yoga system is used by some of our acharyas to say this can all be applied to the path. It actually is the same path. These are stages we also have to go through as we're bhakti yogis, right? Yogis. We're also yogis. But the focus is devotion, is service, but we still need a steady mind, a mind that has a certain state of equilibrium so that when we hear the name, it actually fully is received. So when we sit down to chant, we should think before chanting, okay, here it is. This is the project here. This is the incredible effort I have to make now, incredible opportunity to just day after day focus on the mind. And gradually, as the focus gets stronger, then Krishna will want to, just like he comes to Kardamuni after 10,000 years, and he will also he'll see that for so long I'm going on in this way, then he reveals his form in your heart. This is the state of nishta. I always feel like this is what devotees should be constantly talking about, how to get to this stage. Where am I in this path of bhakti? Where am I? What's the very next step? The book where all these things are described is Madhurya Kadambini. Where am I on this path? There are stages. What's my very next step? Not 10 steps ahead. What's the next step for me to make a little advancement? What is that transition from bhajana kriya, performing sadhana, and starting to feel the removal of anarthas? What should that be like? What is that? And then what is nishta? How to go from that to nishta? These questions are really important. This path we're on is very precise, actually. If it's vague, then we're kind of just left, just going on in a very vague way. But all specifics are given. And it's nice to apply our minds to them. This is why acharyas have given these things. So, when the mind is purified, then Krishna appears. We have Krishna now, but we just can't realize it. He's here now, Radha Shyam Sundar. So beautiful. Their mercy is upon us. Their grace is there. And we can look and appreciate and think how beautiful. But they're actually there. So if we had that experience, what would we be feeling? You would just fall in ecstasy. And you'd get back up and fall again in ecstasy. So this path, though, to that is not just, making some mental effort like a yogi, but we're serving with love. The chanting is also with love. Sneha Yukta, Jiva Goswami says, it has to be, your chanting is a focus on the sound, but also it's united, it's in union with sneha, affection. It must be also affectionate. And service is the expression of our affection and love. We engage ourselves in service with love. And Krishna comes. So this verse and this purport in this section is about this Satya Yuga and this practice of meditation. And I just wanted to point out that we are also yogis, and our devotees, our acharyas have utilized even the yoga system to show stages of advancement on the path of bhakti, so we can see where we are. What's the next step for me, personally? We can identify where we are.
And then see what has to be done, and I'll continue on this path. Rupa Goswami says that when a devotee is there just chanting, they're actually going through different stages of the universe. Just like a yogi. A yogi also, internally, they may be passing through different levels. So the devotee also goes through different stages of the universe, because those stages of the universe correspond to states of consciousness. So if you're overcoming, let's just say, the earth planet, Bor, Bor Bhuva Sva, it means all those things that are pulling you from this earth, you've now overcome it. So what's above that? Bhuvar Loka. Bhuvar Loka is above the earth. What's there? When you die, actually, many living beings are first in Bhuvar Loka, this in-between state before going to your destination. And so sometimes it's said there are ghosts there, but there are also elevated beings there and messengers. It's a very mysterious place. But those who are interested in occult practices, they can connect to beings who are in that plane of existence. You know, like people say, well, they go to some seance or something and they see family members that have died, or someone also could be advanced there and can give some knowledge or some insight about something. That's also an attraction, right? Some people on the spiritual path are not into bhakti because it's too practical and clean. But they're interested in connecting to some higher being and getting some message, or doing drugs, and you can also connect to them by drugs, because it's a little above the material plane. It's a subtle level that also has a lot happening there. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, in his comment to a Bhagavatam verse, he also says that that level, beings from above can go there, and also beings from down here can go there after death. So it's a mix of things. You could find a good personality there too that could be helpful. But usually there's a lot of deception there. Anyway, you're chanting, so you also have to overcome that level, those things, those powers or abilities that may come from other higher beings. What's next? Sva, Svarga. Svarga Loka. We have to overcome Svarga Loka internally, which means what? They're devotees there, but they're attached to power and to position. How relevant is this for us, right? We're devotees, we're part of an institution, you get position, you get some power. You can hold on to it, cling to it, not want to let it go or compete for it. This is Svarga Loka consciousness, because they're devotees, but there's this attraction also still for oneself. Then what's above Svarga? Then there's the four planets of the yogis, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. They're striving for liberation from all suffering, so you have to overcome the desire for liberation. And then, this is given by Rupa Goswami in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he's speaking to Rupa Goswami for 10 days at Dashashvamedha Ghat. He's talking about going through the Bhakti Lata Beej, goes up, and then it pierces the coverings of the universe. Now you have to pierce. The person is just sitting chanting and all this is meant to be happening. And you pierce the levels of the universe, the various levels, and enter the Viraja. There's a river, a subtle river between the material world and spiritual world called the Viraja. And it's said that once you bathe in that river, then all material contamination is gone. Now, you come out from that river. Then what? Where are you? Then you're in the Brahma Jyoti. You have to overcome the desire to stay there. You pass through, but now you have to overcome the desire to stay there in the Brahma Jyoti. It is very powerful. It is God also, His aura, His light, the spiritual light. And you're completely cleansed, and you also feel a kind of ananda, not bhakti, but some pleasure is there. That also has to be overcome. And then you go, you break through to the Vaikuntha planets. And you see the Supreme Lord in His personal feature, Lord Narayan. And you have to overcome that too. Because that's not our goal. The Lord in His opulent form, Aishwarya, He's being served, He's sitting on a throne. People are bowing down. He's the master. You know that He's the master. You're the servant. So Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also teaching us, let go of that too. Overcome
this Aishwarya Bhav. You have to go further, go up, go up, go up, because finally this Bhakti Lata Bij, it is meant to embrace the lotus feet of Krishna himself. That's the resting place. You know a vine? A vine needs something to touch something in order to grow up. That's why you see sometimes they're going up trees, or they're going up buildings, or they're going up, what's it called, trellis. You make a trellis, and then the vine goes up. So this vine of bhakti, the bhakti lata, is meant to finally come to the lotus feet of Krishna. That's the resting place. And then it is complete. You are there eternally with Krishna. In loving service, spontaneous loving service. So this is the path of bhakti yoga. Going through all these stages and levels. And it's also said that, where do upasampradayas come from? I'll just end with this. The sampradaya, what makes it very effective, the sampradaya, is that all these stages are known and respected, and one goes through them one by one. Because upasampradaya comes from when you try to skip over these stages. If you suddenly jump to trying to meditate on Krishna's pastimes and you haven't cleansed your heart, your mind is not steady even. Your mind is restless, but you're jumping to some higher level. You've skipped these stages, and that creates upasampradaya, a sampradaya that is actually not true, not effective, a deviant path. So all the upasampradayas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, comes from skipping the crumb. Crumb means the step-by-step process. So these steps should be seen and known and understood and followed. They're given by Rupa Goswami. They're commented on by all of our acharyas. Prabhupada again and again will talk about these nine stages of bhakti. And we can spend a little time focused on them, because this is also happening in this section, Karda Muni. In Satya Yuga, it was also known, the different stages of equilibrium of mind and finally full concentration. Yoga Sutras, Patanjali, he says also that there are many stages that lead to the goal. Ashtanga Yoga means eight stages. The last stage is Samadhi. You enter Samadhi, and from there you attain the goal. But he says, there's a verse where he says, and also, if you have Ishvara Pranidhanat, if you surrender to Ishvara, and the commentators there say also, this means that you have to perform Vishesh Bhakti, a very special, intense form of bhakti. Then you do skip all those other things that are necessary and immediately come to Samadhi. You skip the yamas and the niyamas and the pranayam, pratyahar, dharana, dhyan, and samadhi. You come to samadhi immediately by devotion to God. So he just throws that in there as like one verse after giving this whole system, and the main focus is his system of meditation. But there's a verse that just says, but if you perform bhakti, surrender to God, then you immediately come to samadhi and can also reach your goal that way. So it's like he gives a little seed of bhakti, the path of bhakti, in his Yoga Sutras. And we have that path fully developed, fully formed, fully explained. We don't have the seed, we have the full explanation. And we also can look at it, see it, follow. And how wonderful is this journey that we're on? We're journeying through all these lower states of consciousness to the highest pure state of consciousness. And that state of consciousness, you are called, at that point, you are called a devotee. That is the highest potential of the living being, to become a devotee of God, of Krishna specifically. So we'll stop here. Any thoughts, comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu. Yes, here, and then we can go here.
Thank you, Prabhu. The Bhakti Lata Bij, when is that seed planted? At initiation?
It may not be directly at initiation. It could be before and it could be after. Uh-huh. Because it's dependent on our deep surrender
and our service to the spiritual master, uh-huh. to the service of that person who has it. So it may come before initiation, it could, potentially, because one could somehow be in a state from maybe previous lives where they just see that person and they surrender,
yes.
give themselves. So once the surrender and the service is activated, then the actually, even though it's being given, it's available, but then it's fully actually placed yeah. in the heart, in the chitta.
And placed in the heart where we already have a dormant love for God, but it's asleep, it's covered. So is that like the fertile ground?
Yeah, there's some different talk about how it works. You know, so there are some people say the bhakti, it's like activating the bhakti lata bij. And other people say that it is actually, you don't have that love for Krishna until it's implanted. You have your atma, and your atma has ananda, but that ananda is not pure bhakti. It's just the ananda of being the atma. So some people say that that is the Satchidananda is the nature of the atma, but they may say it's not necessarily that ananda is not bhakti ras. It's not the sweetness of the love for God. And others will say, no, it's already there, and that what's given by a guru is a kind of activation of it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's a topic
yes,
to be discussed.
Okay.
So there's some.
When will you be giving a course on Madhurya Kandambini?
That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
Would you consider that?
Yes, yes. Of course, it's quite large. It would take a long time, but
it would. Hey.
But it would be wonderful to dive in that, into that together.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Hare Krishna. Prabhu. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. I like this comparison with the Yoga Sutras Patanjali that you talk about. The mudha, kshipta, vikshipta, ekagra, and the fifth one you didn't mention is nirudha.
Yes, nirudha.
It's a full control of the mind.
Yes, the complete stoppage.
Yeah, could you explain about that?
Yes, so actually he says when you come to ekagra and nirudha, the last two, that is actually yoga. Everything before that is not yoga, it's just getting prepared for yoga. But when you finally come to concentration of the mind, you have the ability to concentrate, and also then the next stage is you completely stop all material vrittis. Vrittis are like all the movements of the mind, thoughts, feelings, desires, they all completely stop at nirodha. So at that stage, it's complete, it's like the chitta is completely clean and can then receive whatever comes to it spiritually. You know, so it depends. If a yogi has some bend towards impersonalism, then this, if they have some, the sangha that they've had by practicing this yoga has the aim of liberation, impersonalism, then they can just merge into the Brahma Jyoti. But if they happen to have some, let's say, yoga mishra bhakti, bhakti mishra yoga, perhaps, then there may be a chance of actually seeing Paramatma from that point. So, yes, yeah, so those five stages. So that fifth stage is nirodha, a complete stoppage of all material vrittis. Yeah. And then one is in samadhi, one is in complete trance too.
Thank you ever so much, Prabhuji. It was just brilliant, amazingly nourishing soul class. Thank you very much. I have 2 points just to share how wonderfully, from philological point of view, you brought this to us, this charismatic, the word charismatic, and you're right, it's in all the languages, like this reflecting Krishna. In, you know, Radha, her name also has its reflections in other languages. And for example, Radha, the pleasure potency, joy, right? So in Russian, Radha, Radost, Yarad, this root, it's joy, means joy. So it's really beautiful. And regarding the yoga, the first in my case, the first practices that helped me to control my mind, to really focus, is the asanas.
Yes.
When you really, on the physical level, you
yes.
practically you do it, and it really helps with mantra.
Yes, that's true. These first steps of yoga are helpful for devotees in some ways, more than just physical health, but because everything is linked to the mind.
Yeah.
So if the body, if you're feeling comfortable in your body, and also the breathing is very much connected to your mind.
Absolutely.
You know, so if you start to just breathe fully, you never notice when you're panicking, your breath becomes very shallow and quick. It means that your mind is disturbed. There's a relationship. So if your breath becomes long and slow, your mind starts to finally settle a little bit. And then the next stage. So they're all very scientific, how all those stages actually help you to come to equilibrium of the mind.
Yeah, it's pure science, yeah. Every emotional state has a corresponding pattern of breath. When yes. we're stressed, we breathe shallowly, and
yeah.
vice versa. This is how we can trick our mind, yeah. just by regulating the breathing pattern,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
But thank you very much again. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Could I ask a question?
Sure. I think,
another.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that education means to actually revive our God consciousness,
yes.
connect with God. Historically, what was the situation like before separation of church and state? Mm. Because that separation seems to have really been a down, but was it even, when did that occur?
Even if you look at, like, the, say, the Middle Ages, you know, even in the West, but everyone had a certain God consciousness at that time. It was kind of embedded in all the different arts, for example. You know, there's many paintings that were done at that time, and a lot of these painters, actually, they would also, speaking of yoga, they didn't know the whole yoga system, but there are writings that describe, for them to actually begin to draw something, they would enter a certain state, and also have the ability to concentrate and focus and see that state before them and then begin to draw it. So there's some, even in the West, there's some, there's a certain consciousness the further back we go, which was a little bit more clean and a little bit more capable of some of these things. Not everywhere. The world is, there's all different parts and there's all kinds of things happening. But in general, especially, you know, certain places, these things were just taken for, they were just a given, mm-hmm. that there is a God. And you know, when if you read Plato and some of these Greek philosophers, they also explain these things, that every form has a transcendental origin. The form, in Sanskrit the word is jati. Jati. It's a category of something. But the only reason why it exists here on a physical level is because it exists on a higher spiritual level. This is Plato's philosophy. And it had an impact. And even before Plato, he didn't just make it up either. He was also part of a kind of society, right? So this is these are ideas that were very prominent. Yeah. Really, it's from the Enlightenment, the point of the so-called Enlightenment, where it turned away from God to the human more, the focus. Even you can look at this through all the arts, music and art. You know, I studied classical music. Medieval music is all about God. You know, Bach, yeah. he also from the Baroque era, he said that every note I've ever composed is for the glory of God. Mm. So that was a mood, that was a spirit then. And then the next period is the so-called Enlightenment, or the Romantic era, it's called in music. First classical and then romantic. But it's starting to move more and more towards not God but us, my life, humans, relationship, my emotions, the emphasis just turned to oneself and away from God. And because of that, you lose the ability to perceive God. So even though it was more natural formally to be able to even just not even just know of God or have knowledge, but perceive his presence. Because the mind was turned more in that direction. And as it gradually turns away and more towards oneself, one loses a certain capacity to feel that presence of God. So it's hard to put a date on it, but gradually with time, with Kali Yuga, then these things just begin to turn more and more away from God. And therefore, somebody may just say, believe in God at all, it actually means they don't have the capacity in their present state to actually even perceive that He's everywhere. And as we get purified, then it won't be just knowledge, but it'll be an experience.
Yeah. All right, now.
Yes, Prabhu.
The Romantics, the Romanticism, they were very much into Eastern thought. They were starting to get scriptures from the East, translated directly into English even.
Well,
during the Enlightenment, they started to get scriptures from the East, from Persian.
Uh-huh.
You know, and these guys were starting, a lot of these thinkers, Voltaire's famous. I mean, he wasn't like a church person.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, they're looking at these scriptures. There's a whole spiritual tradition that predates, you know, what they received in the West.
Yes.
So there's a lot of dynamics going on here. And I don't think this church and state thing is Vedic. You know, the kings doesn't endorse an institution. And then it becomes an arm of the Kshatriya state policy. You know, the Kshatriyas support Brahminical culture. You know, they support, that's a whole different thing that was happening in the West, late Middle Ages. You know, the other thing with the humanities, they really started to rise during the Renaissance. It was really a little bit before the Enlightenment.
What, who?
Humanism. Humanism.
Oh, humanism, yeah. Yeah. Jai. Thank you, Prabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.